Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
So when a new president orders that, because there's so much gun violence going on in the country, and he comes in and he says, I have the right to take away the guns from everyone, then people, and he sends out the military to seize everyone's guns, we and the courts have to sit back and wait until every named plaintiff gets, or every plaintiff whose gun is taken comes into court.
In appropriate cases, courts have certified class actions on an emergency basis. We found at least four cases in recent years where that was done. But more fundamentally, we profoundly disagree with the characterization of the merits.
So this is the Supreme Court. This is Thursday. This is oral arguments in what you're hearing described as the birthright citizenship case, but it's really not. It's really the universal injunction case. You have a president who has issued an executive order saying that persons born in the United States to illegal immigrant parents do not have citizenship. That is a misunderstanding of the 14th Amendment because they are not subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Therefore, my administration will not treat them as, and you can't give them papers, and they're not citizens. And several different judges have been brought an objection to this, the executive order. And states also have specifically filed against this. In fact, the states were one of the respondents in this case. The reason the states are there is because they're saying this puts burdens on us to regulate based on, for example, you know, like the access of Medicaid and some other procedural matters for us and where the injunctions are issued and where the injunctions are not issued. And nationwide injunctions have been issued, meaning that the president cannot enforce this EO anywhere in the in the country. And his lawyer, John Sauer, has come here and said, the Solicitor General for the United States, has said, no. Look, this is not how this works. Under Article 3, that's the portion of the Constitution that deals with the courts, they are not allowed to issue nationwide injunctions. They're only allowed to issue preliminary injunctions for the particular plaintiffs in front of them. Granting some judge in Cincinnati the ability to stop the president everywhere the United States law applies, based on his decision about whether he thinks the case is likely to win or not later on, that's crazy time. You're letting one judge overrule the president everywhere based on limited jurisdiction. That can't be the answer. You've got to make it so that only the people who brought the lawsuit are affected. And Justice Sonia Sotomayor is asking the question, the same question I asked, which is, okay, let's not think about this for birthright citizenship, because it's easy if you're a Republican to be like, stop interfering with the president. You know, stop trying to thwart the president from doing what's right. Well, what if a different president, right? The rules always have to be applied to other situations. What if a future president decided to, and I think her example here was a little bit clumsy, you know, all the guns and sending the army in are both fundamentally problematic. But let's say it was a little bit more restricted. Let's say the president just issues, you know, President Kamala Harris or President, you know, Gretchen Whitmer gets, or, you know, President Giffords, let's say, gets into office. Gabby Giffords gets into office and says there will be no more sale of the 223 or 556 ammunition in the United States. All, you know, Ruger Ranch rifles and AR-15 style platforms, those guns and that ammunition illegal as of today. And then they, what, you know, even if they started seizing it, but even if they just prohibited the sale. And plaintiff, you know, A comes and says, well, that's unconstitutional. And the court says, yes, that's right. But that then issues a nationwide injunction. And the president, President Democrat, says, you can't stop us everywhere. You're just one judge in one case. If you want to protect your gun rights, you're going to have to sue us. And by the way, we're not going to fight it. Fine, you win. You know, you win and that's it. But for everybody else, tough luck. So the only people who get their constitutional rights protected to buy a gun, in this case, are people who can afford to take the time to get a lawyer. Add the wrinkle that you're talking about illegal immigrants, people who are already it's difficult for them to claim any kind of legal protection or help because they don't want to come forward and say, hey, it's us. It's us. It's the illegal immigrants. Our kids, our citizens, please don't punish them. Yeah, I mean, okay, so that's where we're at. And the government is saying, you can't stop us. I mean, they're not saying that overtly, but that's what is the question is, you know, can the government actually be stopped from doing something that to this point in history, every court has agreed they were wrong about? Both practice of prior presidents, Congress, and the Supreme Court have all said the same thing. Anybody born here, regardless of their parental status, except in very fine cases, like if it's diplomats or troops are here on our soil in times of war. Okay, people to whom the phrase, you know, subject to the jurisdiction thereof does not apply. So Elena Kagan, again, and, you know, I kind of hate this case because the Trump administration is making me want to agree with the the liberals. Because, and by the way, I've listened to the arguments and I've read some of the articles about this case. I'm surprised that people seem to be unsure what the court's going to do. I think the court is going to tell them that they're wrong. I think the court is going to say, no, universal injunctions do make sense in certain cases, especially where the constitutional precedent is so obvious. It doesn't mean you might not eventually win and change the precedent, but as a preliminary matter, you don't get to pretend like we haven't ruled on this. We've ruled on this. We might change, but you don't get to pretend we haven't ruled on this in the preliminary sense.
I think that that's the important question in this case. Let's just assume you're dead wrong. How do we get to that result? Does every single person that is affected by this EO have to bring their own suit? Are there alternatives? How long does it take? How do we get to the result that there is a single rule of citizenship that is not, that is the rule that we've historically applied rather than the rule that the EO would have us do?
Yeah, how do you get there? Because if they keep losing in the lower courts and they don't appeal to the Supreme Court, the winners in the cases can't appeal because there's nothing to appeal. How does it ever get to the Supreme Court to issue on the merits? Because, by the way, they did not appeal on the merits. They have not brought the actual question of whether citizenship comes at birth, no matter whether your parents are here illegally or not. They haven't asked that question yet of the Supreme Court. They're only asking to allow to prevent the universal injunctions. His answer is, well, we could treat them as a class action.
Rule 23 would be one natural path, assuming that a class could be certified, which we might dispute in this particular case.
That's super important. I know he said it fast, but what he just said is super important. I'll come back to it in a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now, but if you are on 98 eastbound, just east of Navarre Beach Bridge, you're going to be seeing some delays as the congestion through that construction zone. Other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. So, okay, the alternative to a universal injunction is allow a class action to be formed. And a class action follows Rule 23, which is very complicated. There's a lot of checkboxes. And what he's arguing at the Supreme Court is don't allow universal injunctions. If it's a class action problem, let a class action solve it. But then listen to what he says right at the end of this clip. It's very important.
Rule 23 would be one natural path, assuming that a class could be certified, which we might dispute in this particular case.
We would dispute it being a class, meaning there would be no alternative, or at least he might argue that there's no alternative.
I think the question is there a class that's just all children of people who have entered illegally? Is that an appropriate class? Can the same thing be done under Rule 23? Or are you going to tell me that, no, Rule 23 has lots of requirements, and you'll never be able to certify a class like that?
Rule 23 provides the equitable tools subject to rigorous criteria, appropriately rigorous criteria, to obtain that kind of class-wide
interest. That suggests to me you're going to be standing up here in the next case saying that Rule 23 is inapt for this circumstance with this number of people, maybe with some questions that are individual, who knows. So let's put Rule 23 aside, because I got to tell you, that does not fill me with great confidence.
She's right. He's saying you can't allow universal injunctions because we have class actions. And she's saying, you just said that you might not let class actions be the case. You would fight that. You might not let class be certified. So that doesn't solve anything. The alternate recourse you've given us, you've even said that you don't consent to in advance. So what are you saying is the way to solve this for, again, if it's guns, all of the other people who might try to buy guns whose rights are being violated. Or in this case, all of the people who were born here under a rule that stood for over 100 years who think they're citizens. How do you protect all the people who can't go to court or don't take the trouble of going to court? Where are their rights? Where are they going? How is that going to be protected?
There are all kinds of abuses of nationwide injunctions. But I think that the question that this case presents is that if one thinks that it's quite clear that the EO is illegal, how does one get to that result in what time frame on your set of rules without the possibility of a nationwide injunction?
On this case and on many similar cases, the appropriate way to do it is for there to be multiple lower courts considering it, the appropriate percolation that flows through the lower courts, and then ultimately this court decides the merits in a nationwide binding precedent. You have a complete inversion of that through the nationwide injunctions where the district courts.
So, General Sauer, are you really going to answer Justice Kagan by saying there's no way to do this expeditiously?
Well, I'll refer to my former answers. Rule 23 provides the tools to do so, multiple injunctions.
But you resisted Justice Kagan when she said, could the individual plaintiffs form a class?
That has never been briefed in the court below. I do not concede that we wouldn't oppose class certification in this particular case. There may be arguments that this case is or is not appropriate for class certification.
So Amy Coney Barrett is agreeing with Kagan, at least agreeing with the force of the question. By the way, later on, you're going to have Sonia Sotomayor asking a very similar line of questions, which is very compelling. And then when she gets done, Neil Gorsuch, another conservative on the court, is like, yeah, I don't have any more questions. Sotomayor just asked the ones I was going to ask better than I could. I'm telling you, I read the judges and the justices in this case as, and some of whom hate universal injunctions, okay? But I'm reading them in this case as, you're crazy. Like, what you're bringing to us is a problem where if the executive decides to violate the Constitution, your line of argument would give us no ability to stop him, or we would have no ability to stop him for many, many years by the time he's not even present anymore. Like, the violations can go on for 4 or 5 years. And they're not wrong. The way that the administration is arguing this, they're saying, yeah, unless somebody goes to court to stop us, we can keep doing it. And by the way, even if a judge in one circuit, like the Second Circuit, issues an injunction, we're not necessarily going to obey that in other circuits, of course, and we might not even obey that in the Second Circuit for anybody other than the particular plaintiffs. This case is not about birthright citizenship. This case is what to do when a president is doing what appear to be unconstitutional things. That's true whether it's Biden or Obama or Bush or, in this case, Trump, or some future president. Because, by the way, universal injunctions have been used a lot in the last 50 years. They have really increased in prominence as presidents are doing more and more things to push the boundaries.
Say there were an individual person even. Let's say it wasn't a class. And goes up and gets a ruling from the Second Circuit that the EO is illegal. Does the government commit to not applying its EO in the entire Second Circuit? Or does it say, no, we can continue to apply the rule as to everybody else in the Second Circuit?
I can't say as to this individual case. Generally, our practice is to respect circuit precedent within the circuit, but there are exceptions.
Yes, that is generally your practice, and I'm asking.
That's why everybody's laughing, because that's the point. Historically, if a Second Circuit judge says no can do, historically, the president has obeyed that. That's the practice. And he's like, well, you know, usually we obey that. And she's like, yeah, exactly. But we have to ask you whether you actually will obey that.
Whether it would be your practice in this case.
I can't answer because it would depend on what the lower court decision said. So there are circumstances, as I was suggesting, where we think that we want to continue to litigate that in other district courts in the same circuit as well.
Yeah,
as
so that
circuits.
Means it's not even the normal time it takes for everything to get up, you know, through the circuit courts and to the Supreme Court. Because even in those circuits that say that the EO is illegal, you're going to be saying, no, you know, we only commit to saying it's illegal to this one guy who brought the suit.
And to nobody else.
Suppose that there's a single person who brings the suit, and it gets all the way up to us after 3 or 4 or 5 years. And we say, you know.
By the way, meanwhile, everybody else's rights are being violated, okay, right? Because they're not even parties to a lawsuit.
And we say, you know, we really do agree with those four precedents that Justice Sotomayor started with, and your EO is illegal. Is that only going to bind the one guy who brought this suit?
No, that would be a nationwide precedent that the government would respect.
So finally, once it gets to us after 4 years, you're going to respect that.
Yes, and in addition, we may well respect circuit-wide precedent. The Second Circuit, it just is.
And for 4 years, there are going to be like an untold number of people who, according to all the law that this court has ever made, ought to be citizens who are not being treated as such.
And in the meantime, any of those plaintiffs could have come forward and sought, you know, preliminary injunctive relief.
Yeah, you could just hire a lawyer. Just go hire a lawyer. Everything's going to be fine. Have a million people go hire lawyers. And we'll have you know, a million cases. And it won't be any burden on the court. I mean, that's the position they're taking. So, and again, I just wanted to say, this is not purely about Trump. This is many other presidents have had universal injunctions against them. It's just that the response to the UIs has been so different. And there's a very good conversation to be had about why there's more UIs now. In fact, actually, Brett Kavanaugh got into this a couple of different times, and he basically said, look, you know, Congress is dysfunctional, so presidents are acting. Presidents are trying to do what they think is right. Trump is trying to do what he thinks is right. Biden was trying to do what he thinks is right. Obama was trying to do what he thinks is right. But somebody somewhere has got to be able to stop them if they're wrong about the legality or the constitutionality of their behavior. And historically, you know, universal injunctions is one way. Class actions is a much less effective way. But you guys aren't even saying you would agree to a class action. You're not even saying you would agree to other enforcement within the same circuit. You're not even saying, you know, like if it gets to us, finally, maybe. But until that point, for 3 or 4 or 5 years, you're just going to keep violating people's rights on the basis of a very, very well-established precedent. So, again, this is a very important case. We're not going to get a ruling on this for a couple of months like usual, you know, June or July. But this is a very important question. Future presidents will not be on your side. And how this rule plays with future presidents is going to get set by how it's playing with this particular president. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Still rolling accident-free right now. I-10, I-110 are actually looking good. But again, if you are on 98 eastbound, just east of Navarre Beach Bridge, we're seeing some minor delays there. But other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Lexus, BMW, Jaguar.
Where is the best place to take your vehicle for service and repair? That, my friend, is Matrix Auto Service, the future of auto service.
Porsche, Mercedes, Land Rover.
Their expert technicians provide top-notch service and repairs to all makes and models. At Matrix Auto Service, they pride themselves on transparency, honesty, and customer satisfaction with their number one goal, getting you back on the road quickly and safely. Matrix Auto Service, 5675 North Davis Highway.
When it comes to precious metals, there's only one place to consider, and that's Emerald Coast Coins. They're the local leader in dealing with coins and jewelry, gold, silver, diamonds, and sterling silver. Emerald Coast Coins buys, sells, and trades. And for the past 15 years, customers from all over the Gulf Coast have trusted Emerald Coast Coins for the best estimates and prices in town. Stop in today. Emerald Coast Coins on Creighton Road.
Join Claimology Thursday at 9:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Matthew Vanderford with Claimology will be talking about insurance claims. He'll be discussing storm claims, as well as the importance of being properly insured prior to a storm and inspections after a storm. Matthew will be taking calls to answer your questions, so you'll know what to do before the next storm arrives. That's Thursday at 9:30 with Claimology on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings 5 till 9 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, angels.
Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, 628 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. The Trump administration hoping for some movement on a ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine. President Trump says he'll be speaking on the phone this morning with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Vice President Vance met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Rome yesterday. The two met after Pope Leo XIV's inaugural mass at the Vatican. New York City and federal officials investigating the deadly crash of a Mexican tall ship into the Brooklyn Bridge. The National Transportation Safety Board ready to go team on Sunday, the day after the Mexican Navy training ship slammed into the bridge, killing two people, injuring a dozen others.
It's crazy. Have you seen the video of it? It just drives into the bridge and breaks off the tops of the mast. And I think, what, two Mexican sailors died in the process?
Right, yeah,
it's awful. And, John, you were saying you think their nav system went out, all their electronics went out, they couldn't steer or anything?
Yeah, that's what had happened, and they had a power outage, so they couldn't steer.
Why were they aimed at the bridge in the first place?
Well, the pilot ship had it at the point where they could go underneath it or something like that, but then it just started drifting after they lost
and power.
Then, boom, that was it, yeah. Okay.
You would think a tall ship would have non-electronic resources that it could use, but I'm certainly no expert. But, yeah, horrible tragedy. Sorry. Go ahead, David.
Well, Scottie Scheffler, a major champion once again. He won the PGA Championship after finishing at the top of the leaderboard, 11 under par. It's the third major championship for his career.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 6:30 here on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. You've heard about the rescue of the girl with the drone. That's amazing. But also, we found somebody on Navarre Beach after being missing for 6 hours, a diver. Good news story.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Presidents Trump, Obama, and Clinton are among past and present world leaders and others wishing former President Biden a successful recovery from prostate cancer. Louisiana Senate Republican Bill Cassidy is a physician.
The prognosis can be good because there's been so much medical innovation that has found cures even for the prostate cancer, which has gone to bones, as reportedly the former president has.
Senator Cassidy on Fox's Sunday Night in America. A Republican tax and spending cut bill advances in the House.
The House Budget Committee's vote to advance the bill is a turnaround after four GOP hardliners rejected it on Friday. Some of their concerns included Medicaid work requirements and spending. House Speaker Mike Johnson said there were a lot of conversations over the weekend to try and address these issues.
Fox's Ben Rivera. House Rules Committee vote comes next, then a full House vote. America's listening. Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 71 degrees. It is partly cloudy this morning in Pensacola. Well, we are learning more about this investigation into the Pace Pharmacy owners, Stephen and Monique Berklow. The Berklows are accused of conspiring to traffic prescription pills, with Stephen allegedly defrauding TRICARE out of $30 million in just 10 months. This happened back in 2015, allegedly. Investigators say narcotics were sold illegally at that pharmacy through a drive-through window. An undercover informant reportedly purchased hundreds of bottles of the prescription drugs linked to Stephen, who's also accused of making a stronger version of oxycodone pills at home. Monique reportedly also sold unauthorized prescriptions, including narcotics disguised as being COVID-19 kits. The couple is believed to have used multiple doctors' identities to issue fraudulent prescriptions and laundered money through several banks. Despite an ongoing investigation, Pace Pharmacy does remain open. They have a part-time pharmacist that is still filling prescriptions. A Santa Rosa County deputy has died. The sheriff's office says Sergeant Dale Berrien passed away Friday due to a cardiac incident. Sergeant Berrien served the Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office for 21 years. He was assigned as a patrol deputy in Gulf Breeze. Two people have died after a Baldwin County crash on Friday. That happened on Highway 98 near Alberta. 89-year-old Joanna Martin and 55-year-old Tony Robinson were killed after their vehicle was hit from behind by a pickup truck that was driven by a Foley man. Now, that crash, then their vehicle crashed head-on into another truck that was driven by a Gulf Shores man. Robinson died at the scene. Martin was taken to Sacred Heart Hospital, where she passed away. The drivers of both trucks were also taken to the South Baldwin Hospital for treatment. The Alabama Law Enforcement Agency is still investigating that crash. Well, Florida's new senator marking a milestone. Senator Ashley Moody recently spent her 100th day in office. Governor Ron DeSantis appointed her to replace Marco Rubio after Rubio became Secretary of State. Moody says it's been a whirlwind passing legislation and confirming President Trump's nominations. One law that passed was a bill of her own, the Helper Act, designed to make it easier for first responders to buy homes in the communities that they serve. Rick Scott and others in Washington say they are thinking about the Biden family today. The Bidens announced yesterday that Joe Biden has been diagnosed with an aggressive form of prostate cancer. Senator Scott wrote on X that he and his wife, Ann, send Biden and his family their prayers for the former president's good health and recovery. Democrat Congresswoman Lois Frankel says she's also keeping President Biden and his family in her thoughts. She wrote on X that Biden's a fighter. She wishes him strength and resilience as he faces another challenge. 634, News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
Brought to you by ECUA Bulkway Services. Now call for pickup. Call by 2 p.m. the day before your service day. You can learn more at ecua.fl.gov. Still reporting accident-free right now. Looks like I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. Not seeing any more delays on 98. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. Now our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We are going to be looking at a beautiful day today with mostly sunny skies, high near 86 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping to 74. For Tuesday, 10% chance of a stray sprinkle, mostly sunny skies for most of us, high near 86. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 76 degrees. Best chance of rain for the week moves in on Wednesday with a 40% chance of a stray shower or thunderstorm, high near 89. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 68. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 71 degrees in Pensacola, 73 in Gulf Breeze, and 70 in Milton. Our next news at 7 o'clock and breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Treasury yields spiked this morning after Moody's downgraded the U.S.'s credit rating, citing fiscal concerns. The 30-year Treasury yield was up over 10 basis points to 5.021%. The 10-year yield was also over 10 basis points higher to reach 4.542%. The global hospitality company that provides food and beverage services at the Caesars Superdome and Smoothie King Center began telling employees that they could be out of a job as of July 15th if the company's long-running contract with the state is not renewed. Officials said Sodexo Live filed a WARN notice on Friday. President Trump has blasted Walmart after the country's largest retailer warned this week that it will have to raise prices because of tariffs. Walmart CFO told CNBC the company is pleased with the progress in trade talks, but that duties are still too high. Futures are sharply lower. Friday, the Dow Industrials gained 331, the NASDAQ up 98, the S&P 500 up 41. That's your money now.
Yeah, sure, the players bring some skill to the game, but if I don't put them in my lineup, who cares? Not me. I'm Eric Rubino, fantasy baseball GM and league runner-up 2 of the last 9 years. I use the Progressive Name Your Price tool with options based on my budget. And for a guy that's used to being in control, it fits. Like this runner-up t-shirt. Champ gets a trophy, but you can't wear a trophy. Boom.
Get options based on your budget with Progressive, even if you're not a legend in your own mind. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At Pensacola Christian Academy, your child will thrive in a safe, caring environment designed to build a solid foundation. Kindergartners become confident readers, develop fine motor skills through cursive writing, and sharpen problem-solving skills with engaging hands-on learning. Experience the affordable excellence and unmatched value of Pensacola Christian Academy. Learn more at enrollpca.com/radio.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services. Advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
The cost of healthcare is in the news.
Tune in Wednesday at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel as ProHealth will be the guest and we'll be discussing the ProHealth Medical Membership Program as well as the 20 affordable on-site ultrasounds they now offer. Find out how ProHealth can help you take out the stress and the cost of healthcare. Wednesday at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Are you looking for the best news in talk radio in Pensacola? Then tune in to News Radio Pensacola. We're your source for the latest news, weather, and traffic, as well as in-depth interviews with local and national leaders. We also have the best talk radio lineup in town, with hosts that are passionate about the issues that matter to you. So whether you're looking to stay informed or just want to hear some great conversation, News Radio Pensacola is the place for you. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
Say, okay, the current landowners can do what they want as it stands and with the rules they have. But the minute they sell it, anybody that buys that property is already notified of the fact that they're buying farm land, land that's going to be used for farming. Therefore, it doesn't drive the price. It keeps the price at a stable area. You can't change it for the future without giving those that are, have it currently an opportunity to do with what they wanted to do. Because then this is a delicate area of property, right?
All right, this is Kerry Smith. He is the Santa Rosa County Commission chairman, and he's the District 2 representative. And right now, which is Milton East Milton, and they're talking about the rural protection zone. And if you're not familiar with this, I understand it's just a little bit of an obscure issue, but it's a big issue in Santa Rosa County. And it affects an issue that in Escambia County we care about, but I'm not sure if we care about it quite the same way. But it's the same questions apply. There's a line across the middle of the county on Highway 182. And there is a little bit below that, there's what's called a transition zone. Up above that, there's what's called the rural protection zone. And the point of this very scant two pages, basically, portion of the codes in Santa Rosa County is to try to protect the rural nature of that part of the county. And the discussion, Rhett Rowell, County Commissioner for District 3, that's the north end, is he's wanting to move that line farther south to protect more farmland, to protect more of the rural nature of the area up there. And the basic nature of the problem here is that Colton Wright is going to say, look, this line doesn't do what you think it does. It's not nearly as effective as you think it is. There's all kinds of ways in which this doesn't prevent the kind of development or destruction of rural farmland that you're worried about.
So if we just want to move a line and we want to say the current two pages is good and we're good with that, then I just want everyone to understand, and it's out there on the record, what that means. So that means when someone comes and says, hey, I'm within 1 mile of Crossroad Community, I want to rezone this property to R1, and this board votes to deny it, what's that mean in a court of law? Because I know what our code says. And that's what I'm trying to get to. I just want to know what it means. And what's the expectation for someone that bought land with an expectation based on what our code said, and now we're moving the goalposts?
So in the zone called the RPZ, in that zone, he's saying it already doesn't protect what you think it protects. It's too weak. If you really want to protect farmland, if you really want to protect the rural way of life, we need to do better than these scant two pages that are already in the code. So move the line, don't move the line, that doesn't solve very much. Because if you move the line, it doesn't give you in the expanded area what you think it does. Meanwhile, Rowell is saying, look, we need to expand it because it does do something, and we're trying to protect that quality of life, that rural nature of North Santa Rosa County from encroachment, from sprawl, from development.
Very clear. This is about the rural way of life in District 3. So I'm trying to be as clear and transparent as I can. And again, let's encourage our growth where we've already got everything ready to go. Okay, that's all I'm saying. you know, that's what District 3 is not. District 3 needs to be preserved as much as we can preserve it.
And he's certainly, I mean, that's clearly what he wants. In fact, I think that's what they all want. They want to preserve it, but you still got to have some kind of development up there. And the problem is that this does allow growth along the roads and in the crossroads communities. One of the provisions of the code is there's kind of this zone, this circle zone around any of their crossroad communities that allows there to be development. So Colton Wright says, look, do you think this is working now? Do you really think this is affecting anything right now?
As it sits right now, why do we want to move it? Is it doing its job? Do we feel like the rural area has been protected? I think that's a yes or no situation. So is it working right now?
It's working where the line is currently, and that's why we want to move the line farther to protect even more.
So everyone is in agreement that
you're asking me specifically. I'm answering specifically.
There's no. You're comfortable with where growth has been in District 3 inside the RPZ as it sits right now?
I am comfortable with people having an opportunity to ask for a variance. I'm comfortable with following our own rules in the LDC.
Okay, there's so much here, and I know it's, you know, it may not be the most sparkling conversation, but I want you to hear them, how they're talking about it, because there's such big issues at play in this conversation. For example, if somebody lives in a zone like in the RPZ and they own farmland, can they develop it? Yes. What if somebody comes in and buys? Are they under the rules that the original owner had, or are there new rules because of the new buyer? That's what Kerry Smith was getting at in the beginning. What if the new rules are too restrictive? Or what if the rules are too restrictive? Can they get a variance? You know, one of the things that the commissioners seem to be indicating is they never want to rule out variances, which means that you're allowed to act outside of the rules. Well, on the one hand, acting outside of the rules is good because it allows you to accommodate particular circumstances that might justify that. But as soon as you start making exceptions, well, then the next person comes in and wants an exception. And in Escambia County, we have a problem because we have this sector plan that was put into place that was designed to plan for future growth in the north part of the county. And then opt-outs were allowed, or what you might call variances. Opting out of the sector plan is a kind of variance. And now the variances or the opt-outs have been allowed. Everybody who comes to ask for an opt-out gets it, meaning that the sector plan only works for the people who want it, which means it doesn't work. It's not having the effect that it's supposed to have. So these are, I mean, like I said, these are big questions about what happens with property rights, who gets to decide what to do with your property, can a county create a zone in which it preserves a way of life or a tone, a sort of a setting, you know, just like you have zoning and building codes protect things from being developed in certain ways in smaller sections. This is a broader question of, can you protect a rural area against being developed, and is it being protected effectively now? We'll move in that line, protect it more. Will it protect it at all? Again, this is a very interesting conversation, and I'm trying to get you to think about what the county commissioners can and cannot do when it comes to the big, broad strokes kind of stuff that a lot of people have expressed an interest in, which is in both counties, protecting against sprawl, protecting against rampant development, protecting farmland, which we talk to Ryan Jenkins all the time. And, you know, the big problem with farmland is it's better to sell it to somebody to develop it. You know, but once you plant houses, you can never plant corn. But it's a very lucrative thing to sell to a developer instead of to rent it to a farmer. And if enough of that happens, then how do we eat? Okay. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Still rolling accident free right now. I-10, I-110, 90, 98, even 29 are rolling smoothly this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. If you're thinking about that next vehicle, Frontier Motors is a great source of good quality used cars. They can help you find the kind of car that will best fit your needs. And what I mean by that is because they have 300 cars on the lot, and then they sell, and then they get new, and then they sell, and they get new, and they're always seeing different kinds of cars. And they see what sells fast, and they see what sells low, and they see what people like and what they complain about, and they hear the stories about this, you know, repairs are a lot or not so much. And so they're a source of information for you. I know a lot of times we think of the car seller as the adversary. Well, at Frontier, think of them as an ally, as kind of a guidance counselor. Like, you can ask them, what do people like in this class? Do people like these brands or this make or this model year? Because sometimes they like this generation, not that generation. And these are questions that they can answer for you. And, you know, if they have what you want, buy it. If they don't have what you want, I mean, go looking for it or send them looking for it. They do that for people all the time. But like I said, it's a place where you can start and learn a lot and not have to go meet like 18 different salespeople as you drive all around town to try your different cars. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years, right behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi. So back to this question of the rural protection zone in Santa Rosa County, this line that had been at Highway 182, they were proposing moving it south farther. And the particular location, it has to do with the fire protection zones and who's in charge of which area, so I'm not going to get into the details, but they were going to put another 70,000 acres within the zone to try to make it so you have less development and so you continue to have that rural lifestyle and farmland available in that area. But one of the conversation pieces is, do you allow opt-outs? Do you allow, or what they call variances, either to existing restrictions or to future restrictions if people buy new into that area? Bobby Burkett, County Commissioner for District 1.
One thing I do want to say, and not just on this, but anything, you'll never hear me vote to not allow someone to have an opportunity to present a variance, because then we become a dictatorship. I will never be in favor for that. There's always extenuating circumstances, and so we have to, as a board, have to look individually and make our best choice decision.
I feel where Bobby Burkett's coming from, but I think he's got the analysis backwards. See, he says we have to allow variances, we have to allow particular circumstances, because otherwise we're a dictatorship. I would say it the exact other way around. When you have variances, when you have opt-outs, when you have particular cases where the rules can be exempted or changed, that's actually when you have a dictatorship. Because then you have, and in this case, not a single person dictatorship, but a group of five, because they decide who does and does not get the rules applied to them. The more you allow individual case exemptions, which again, I agree with that in principle. But the problem with individual case exemptions is sometimes it depends on whether the commissioners like you or whether you can make the case well or any other factor, which means it's not the rule of law, it's the rule of personality. And so, yes, on the one hand, you want to make space for exemptions and variances and opt-outs. On the other hand, as soon as you do, you're opening up the door to all the problems of having inconsistently applied rules, right? You also have another problem, okay? People don't want growth. I mean, we want growth. We don't want growth. A lot of people do not want growth. A lot of people don't want more people coming here. A lot of people blame the, you know, these immigrants. You know, people from Alabama and the Midwest and Oregon. I'm from Oregon. And Phoenix and also St. Louis and so forth. But I'm from elsewhere, right? I came here from somewhere else. And we don't want the people coming here from somewhere else. And Colton Wright's like, wait, though. We are also, many of us, the immigrants. You know, we are the source of growth. And not just like me because I moved here, but I moved here and then we made babies. And the babies grow up and the babies need houses, right? And so it's, are we going to stop all of that?
I can't imagine that there's anyone that lives in this county that has children right now that says their kids shouldn't be able to live here. Once they're 18, maybe they go to college, maybe they don't, but where do they go? Do we all want them to go somewhere else? Or do we want them to have the opportunity to stay in the county that we love? Because I'm growth. I'm part of the problem. I got two kids. So blame me for growth. And blame me for growth because I came here in 1990 from a neighboring county. So I'm certainly part of the problem. But I am concerned about what's coming.
Right. And he's right. Just like I'm traffic, you know, you're always in traffic complaining about all the other people that are in their cars trying to go where you're trying to go. Well, you're one of them. Right? Or when it comes to growth, you know, did the house you live in exist 50 years ago? Well, your growth. And if you want your kids to grow up and stay here, their growth, right? And so you might want to not get people from Alabama and Chicago and California coming here, but, you know, there are all kinds of sources of growth. Anyway, the issue of protecting the farmland, the basic disagreement that you have between Colton Wright and Rhett Ryle is, Rhett Ryle thinks that the current plan is pretty good. Let's just include more land in it. Colton Wright thinks the current plan doesn't do what you think it does, so it's mostly symbolic and pointless to expand the zone. You have another problem. Okay? Just to kind of make this as messy as we possibly can. The other problem is, if you expand that line and you make more property into the rural protection zone, are you violating anybody's property rights?
I'm not comfortable with changing what we have and going back and reinventing the wheel with the LDC. I'm comfortable with moving this line, and if we want to add more protections, then let's add more protections. But what I'm hearing is let's add more protections, and then, but then also, you know, I don't want to infringe on property rights. Again, we're not infringing on anyone's property rights. So I don't understand why, if we're for protecting farmland, I don't understand why, what if this doesn't infringe on anybody's rights, then what is the holdup?
Okay, so again, here I would dispute this with Commissioner Rowell. If you're not infringing on anybody's property rights, then you're not accomplishing anything. And if you are accomplishing something, protecting farmland, protecting a rural way of life, inhibiting development, you must be infringing on people's property rights. It is a zero-sum game. You are either imposing a restriction and therefore protecting something you want to protect, in which case you most definitely are changing people's property rights, or you're protecting people's property rights to develop their land as they see fit or to sell it to whoever wants to develop it as they see fit, in which case, you're not. I mean, it's you cannot have it both ways. If the zone is meaningful, it will restrict people's property rights. It will affect their property rights, even if you only apply it to subsequent owners after a sale. You've diminished the value of the sellable property because the ability to develop it has now changed. And this is why you have, and I know for some of you, this is, you're very familiar with this, and for some of you, you might not understand this at all, but, you know a concept of like a taking, where the government takes something that belongs to you, they're supposed to give you compensation under eminent domain rules. But you also have in Florida this concept of a Burt Harris taking, which is where you change the usability of something and therefore diminish its value. And so if you take land that you could do X, Y, and Z with it, and you say, now you can only do X and Y with it, or you can do X, Y, and Z with it, but if somebody buys it from you, they can only do X and Y. Well, that's a taking. That's a restriction. That's an infringement on property rights. So again, if it is meaningful, it will infringe on property rights. If it is not, if it is, does not infringe on property rights, then it does not have any meaning. So in the end, they voted to do this. They're going to have a subsequent conversation about changing the definition of the rural protection zone. They did approve it 5-0, and so they did put 70,000 acres more in, and the people who have now moved their property into the rural protection zone have had their property rights changed to the degree that the RPZ actually does anything. 656 on News Radio 92.3. Oh, we had a really good text in here. Somebody says, I've been doing this for years and years and years, and the only way to make variances work is if they're really hard to obtain. Exactly. They have to be really hard to obtain. Otherwise, the original rules don't make any sense or don't really mean anything anymore. John Pickens has traffic on the 5. John?
That's right. No accidents to report. I-10, I-110 are both flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5s.
It's spring at Anderson Subaru, the perfect time to refresh your ride. With 3.9% for 63 months on 2025 Subaru Outback models, or get 3.9% for 48 months on 2025 Forester models and 2025 Crosstrek models. At Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Subaru for you, Subaru for you. Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
You take care of your car, right? So why not give your auto loan some TLC? Refinance an existing loan from another institution with PennAir Credit Union and lower your interest rate by up to 2%. Plus, you can skip payments for the first 90 days. In addition to a better rate, you'll enjoy convenient banking and a friendly local team always ready to help. Learn more at PennAir.org/auto-refi. That's PennAir.org/auto-refi. All loans are subject to approval. Offer valid on loan applications submitted between April 1st and June 30th, 2025 only. Call toll-free 1-877-4-PENN-AIR for complete details.
Is your business, church organization, civic group, school, or other nonprofit organization having a fundraiser or other community event? Let News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 help you spread the word. Send us your information to be presented on our Here's What's Happening weekly announcements. We look forward to hearing from you. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in this Monday morning at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic updates, but don't always have time to listen to the radio? Well, now you can get text alerts from the News Radio Pensacola app.
Oh, I've seen me a mermaid once. I even seen me a shark eat an octopus. But I ain't never seen no phantom Russian submarine.
Good morning, 659 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne has a headline or two for us. David?
Well, the Trump administration hoping for some movement on a ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine soon. President Trump will be speaking by phone with Vladimir Putin today, while Vice President Vance met yesterday with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Rome. Two met after Pope Leo XIV's inaugural mass at the Vatican.
Yeah, theoretically at 10 a.m. Eastern, so it should be 9 o'clock right after we get off the air. He should be talking to Putin. And they're going to broadcast it live, right? No, not exactly.
Local Talk in the morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay.